top, could you just do a rather stagey and obvious hello, my name is, and...
Hi, my name's Alan Scott. The recording that you got is my maternal grandfather, William Henry Coleman.
You could have a dishing out the ram, Mark. You good? You could hide it. I don't know what I'm standing on all over the mouth out and take me to hide the super ram in. Next one in.
During the First World War, he served as a saddler, and much of the recording you're about to hear relates to what he was doing and the incidental bits that referred to it.
After the war, I'll finish. After the war, we got up to Mons, and they said, well, you've been good boys, you can walk all the way back to Deer in the middle of it. After the November armistice, right across there from Mons to Deer. Beautiful boy, stopping in broken chateaus. And we burnt some beautiful doors from firewood to keep warm. And we got to this place just outside Deer. There'd be a Salvation Army man with us. And a man from Tyneside, Rainer, me, and old Dick West. We all went down to the local Russian Army. I was people getting up, I don't know, it was all right. We come home, and we was up in the loft, where the rat stole a candle away from me while you're looking, while you're not looking. Then we went on strike, eh? You did, we went on strike.
Who did?
We just called us. I ordered gun drilled on. Bloke's been firing them for 4 years.
What?
Officialdom.
Discipline.
Just in the army.
Discipline.
One of Tom said, look here, Sergeant Major, we're finished with you lot. I said, no, we're only volunteers, we're not on that lot. So we've gone on strike, as I squashed. Then we come home. That was it.
Yes, that sounds like a fairly traditional end of the war, everyone just has to walk.
Yes.
Suddenly the military machine just goes, you know what, it's...
Can't be asked.
You sort yourselves out.
Yep.
I mean, there seems to be more foraging at the end of the war than there was actually during it. We burnt a lot of doors.
Yes. Well, the thing was that the area that they were going through, and I'm not sure quite how far it is from Mons to Dieppe, but it's a fair old stroll, in winter, over an area which had been fought over extensively for 4 years. Mm-hmm. Basically, anything that was available would have been used, and therefore you're down to last knockings of whatever was available.
Then, just a cap it, go up to London. I said, all you've got a job to go to, God, it's not, I have. I have. All right, get out of here. I stood out there on Victoria Station. Dirty great Sergeant Major from the Guards come along and said, now, spot yourself up, you're in the Guards. Now, my bloke says, you go to hell. He says, you can march from Grosvenor House, I tell you, though, Grosvenor House. They marched a lot of soldiers, he said, not like a... Was it Rabble or something like that? The Chelsea Barracks. So we get the march from there. They give us a bit of food. Then they said, now, I've had your food. Now we're marching to Fenchurch Street. So we all had to march complete with rags, dirt, filth.
Fenchurch
Street.
Why Fenchurch Street?
I thought you for a walk. And we go down to Purfleet. And to get out
on the train.
Oh, yeah, we got a train. Yeah. That was to get out civilian clothes. And to come out. So I had a suit or 30 bob, whichever you like. Yeah, 30 bob or a suit. I said, I'll have a suit. And back in the day, I ain't got a strike on me.
Really?
We had to wait a couple of days while I settled a strike before we could get
what's
out.
What's a strike about?
I don't know what they
had. Didn't think of those things in those days. But I mean, but you're taking them all down from London. Could they give you your gear up there?
That one of the depots, you see, for team up.
Who's getting discharged?
Yes.
You could have a
but I mean, you'd have thought they'd have discharged them in London.
No different in 1947.
No, was done.
I came back from India to Southampton. Mm-hmm. And had to go up to Yorkshire to be demobbed and kick about for 4 weeks for some reason or other.
And of course they get back to Britain and more walking and more things, and the fact that they're trying to keep them on.
But yes, the idea, you come into what, Charing Cross, you then have to march to Chelsea, you know, to march back to Fenchurch Street. You know, that's not untypical of the military organisation.
And then he gets immediately caught in a strike, which is...
Yeah, which I think...
Again, is also very...
Well, which I think was a civilian strike. Oh. But it, effectively, once the armistice had been signed, an awful lot of people would just take their eyes off the ball.
The last all access done, our roll call, that the original members of the
Vatican
was 12.
And how many were there originally?
145. 12 the original rest. But we full strength the whole time. They said, yeah, how many went through?
Yeah, the other 133.
But we were full strength the whole time.
Yeah, well, none of those had been transferred out or...
Well, they were replaced many times.
They kept replacing all the time.
Yeah,
they
but,
all the originals.
Yeah, but all the others have been killed rather
killed
than transferred
or anything. Out or dispatched off.
Uh-huh.
A whole lot.
The last section is very much about, it's about Belgium, it's about us mentioning the a certain area, and it's just really listening out for details and anything that you think comes up. Well, actually, I'll keep recording while I play it.
Yeah.
When I was on the Belgian coast, his name was Primavera. Villa. In the basement court, and going to top shelf, no fear.
Down the basement, and, less chance of getting those things dropped on you, isn't
it? If you went down the corner of the bay, you got machine guns, so you didn't go around the corner. Do you know Le Pen? You've been to Le Pen, haven't you? Do you know there were string orchestras playing and people dancing? Of course, that's open to dance, wouldn't it? But as our train pulled in, so we had fired through the chimney pots off the railway station. That was the first yells they'd had in the war. They were in a rehearsal, I'm still wished up there. Mate. What happened was, they thought it was going to be a big offensive in that side, you know. They thought it was quite a lot of guns in the chimney. Of course, we started banging on up there. Like, you know. And of course, the water's only a couple of inches down, isn't it? The time we visited Dirty Great Lake. The shells laying about like silver on the ground. They're so fast. Slither, they didn't go slither up the top of the sand.
Yes, because it's an incredibly fine sand, isn't it?
Dirty Great Lake. We shall play.
And
that's all, aren't you? Of course, that's a washout, you see.
Didn't anybody realise that water...
Well, you don't expect all them brass nets to get into that problem, did you? No. Oh, you'd be surprised with these snakes, don't you?
Sir.
I mean, anybody knows that. So, I mean, common sense, because your instructions was to... You mustn't dig down more than 2 feet when you build a dugout. You mustn't build more than 2 feet. Mm. 2 feet, 2 feet of stone brick. That's what you've got.
And that was where the tape ran out.
And
one of the sad things in some ways is I think Grandpa only got back to France once or maybe twice during the succeeding 60 plus years of his life for a variety of reasons, but he still maintained a knowledge and some fluency in the French language. I certainly remember him bumping into a couple of young French girls in Lavenham. This would have been in the late 60s, maybe in the 70s, and being able to hold a very reasonable conversation with them in a combination of their sort of schoolgirl English and his schoolboy oblique army French.
So, are there any last things you'd like to say about listening back to the recording?
It's been an interesting experience listening back to it. I hadn't listened to it myself for a long, long time. I just wish that we'd been able to do something more structured at the time. But, as I say, it was quite an effort to get Grandpa to talk about that period because his attitude was, don't really want to know about it. After the war, he returned to London. He married my grandmother, Elsie Beatrice Neat, in September 1921 in Clapham. He then worked in the London area for the rest of the 20s and I believe into the early 30s. He had his own business towards the end of that time, I think, as a coach trimmer. But that was a victim of the Depression, and I'm not sure whether he relocated his business to Colchester or he moved to Colchester to find work after the collapse of the business. But certainly from the late 30s until the 70s, he was working with a company long gone now in Colchester who were coach trimmers. And I remember going to see him, and he was working on upholstery, tonneau covers and the like for a variety of what I then perceived as being posh cars. They were probably cherished cars. In many cases, there were things like Rolls Royces, but also other, mainly pre-war, open touring cars, that sort of thing. He and my grandmother got through to their diamond wedding anniversary, and he died in the second quarter of 1982. I haven't got to know the exact date, but it was on Grand National Day. He'd watched the race on the television in the afternoon, gone upstairs and didn't come down.
Oh, it makes you laugh, that means. How can they go on and talk forever on this line?
Wartime Memories could not have been created without the support of my patrons. Become a patron by going to www.patreon.com/RobertCrichton.